hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk Saratoga on this Saturday. I think the next show that we have will be in February, if you can believe it. January's gone by so fast, it's terrible. And just remember, do the things you want to do, because before you know it, you're going to be a little older and you may not want to do the things that you want to do. So we have a special guest, and Robin Dalton. And if Robin, if I call you Robin Batty, it's only because I went to to school and went out with a girl named Robin Batty, B-A-T-T-Y. Oh. So,
I will take it as a compliment.
You should. You should. Perfect. But I probably won't. But anyway, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
Commissioner of Public Safety. 5 years ago, did you think you'd be Commissioner of Public Safety?
No. No, I did not. I was thinking about when I was coming over here 10 years ago, what I was doing in Saratoga, and I didn't have kids. I was just married. I was doing an Ironman, and if you had said to me that I would be sitting here doing this, I would have. I don't think I would have taken that bet.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you want to get involved in the community,
absolutely.
And I think. As you know, I'm not for this form of government, but I give credit to anybody that wants to run for politics, even if I, you know, don't. Not that.
If
I don't like the person, I give them a lot of credit. And you know, I love you. So,
well, thank you. Know. But you do give people credit for running for office, and I appreciate that now more than ever because I know what it's like to go through a campaign, and it's brutal. And to put yourself out there and actually like get in the game and is totally different from being on the sidelines and commenting. And sometimes you want to say to people, like, you know, you have so much to say about things in Saratoga, like, get in the game.
Yeah.
So I really tried hard to be thoughtful about how my time in Saratoga evolved. And I kind of let it shape me. And it took me in this interesting path. But I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, we're glad you are, too. I want to get to some topics like transitions and observation in City Hall as a newcomer. What are some of the observations you made?
It's been really, really interesting, and I've learned so much from the campaign, and now I feel like it's been a lot longer than a month.
But I know.
It's really only been a month that I've been in City Hall. But the cool thing about it is that, you know, I'm working with people who were incumbents. They've been in office, some of them for quite some time. And to walk into that environment as the new person, I say to them sometimes, I'm like, I know I seem like a energetic little puppy here, and I know it can be a little bit annoying because I've got all this energy and I'm so excited, but you bring a freshness and the perspective of being a resident into a situation where, you know, they haven't had necessarily that energy or that perspective in a little while. And so when I'm having conversations and things come up, like, that can't be explained, or they're explained with, like, well, we do it that way because that's just the way we've done it. It gives me an opportunity to challenge that a little bit in a respectful way, but, you know, just come in and tackle some of the things that have been problematic for a while, and start fresh with a group of people that really needed some positivity and a good morale boost. And with that, for that, I mean specifically the public safety department.
Yeah,
you know, they really needed someone who came in and really believed in what they were doing, took the time to understand what their jobs were, and was going to be their champion as the Commissioner of Public Safety should be. So it's been really interesting.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but you have a very good deputy.
I do.
And who I honestly thought would be mayor or the commissioner.
Yeah, the commissioner. I know.
But and she would have made a good one, too,
she
because
would've.
Of her knowledge. But so you've got an extra bonus there because you've had somebody that's.
She is the best. So I appointed Eileen Finneran as my deputy. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because the first time I met Eileen was back in 2012. I was presenting a petition to the city council and Chris Mathiesen specifically about communication from public safety and the police department and how I wanted it to be improved. And she and I and the commissioner went a little tit for tat, and it was not pretty. It was a little tricky. And I don't think we had spoken. So that was back in 2012. We really didn't speak or interact until she decided to not primary the gentleman that ran against me.
Right.
And then she called me. Gosh, it must have been like late in the spring, and pretty reluctantly. And we started talking a little bit here and there. She ended up supporting my campaign in the fall. And I think it was just a really surprising and great friendship that came out of that.
Yeah.
And then when it came time to pick a deputy, I really realized that the way that this commission form of government is set up, I needed somebody who, when I came into office on January 1st, they understood how to run the administrative side of the office, because I have the biggest department in City Hall. It's 160 full-time employees and almost 40 part-time employees. So it's a huge, huge department. And you have to sign payroll and do a ton of administrative tasks. And if I had to figure those out while I was trying to figure out how to be the commissioner and lead my team,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how I would have succeeded.
And
for me to work well, I needed this to be in place. And Eileen, you couldn't find anyone better than her, more well-versed than her. She gets along so wonderfully with the administrative staff. They were so excited to have her back. And I'm there full-time, and she's there full-time. And I think you couldn't have a stronger team in place representing their department.
Sure. Well, not only that, but she's worked with multiple commissioners, so she knows how to adapt quickly, I think, to what you want, because she's been there, plus give you advice. Some of the subjects that have been coming up have been unbelievable for Saratoga. The growth of Saratoga in the past few years, and talking with a lot of people, we feel that we've hit our peak 8 years ago. And right now, I think we're overbuilding. Every postage size piece of property, something's going up because they don't have room to expand. I know across the street from my development on Grand Avenue, they've built five new homes on such a small piece of property, you could stick your head out your window and spit on your neighbor if they have their window and hit them bullseye.
So, of course, I have that too, living downtown, but I coming from the city and in New York City, I like love that.
Yeah.
But I do know what you're talking about, and I do think people don't really understand the geographical constraints of how our city is laid out and how it started to develop, because you have some sides of the city that there's literally no more room to grow. And it puts you in positions where people are willing to spend an exorbitant amount of money to buy a house and tear it down and then build something huge where a smaller house once was. And it's hard. I mean, smart growth, I think, is a huge
topic. There's nothing wrong with, hey, we hit the limit. I mean, you know, we don't have to kind of look for things, other things to build. I mean, I think we've become more of a tourist city rather than a community like we were. I moved up here in 86, so it was like almost a renaissance of a small city in the country, and we can't say that anymore.
Well, I do think one of the important things to think about, though, is how economically depressed this area was in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, yeah.
And how far Saratoga has come, and not losing sight of all the progress we've made. But I understand what you're saying, because what I see is sometimes decisions being made about development that, for example, don't marry up with the infrastructure we have at all.
Right.
At all. And, you know, I remember a couple years ago, the mayor at the time was very vocal about smart growth and being conscientious about how we were developing. And then under her administration, they approved a hotel at the corner of Washington and Broadway, where it's kind of Starbucks is right now.
Yep.
And it's like a 300-room hotel. And I thought to myself, like, and it was going to have an off-site parking location. And I thought, like, that corner, that's a truck route. That's such a heavily congested corner.
Oh,
I just thought, how can we do this? You know, it's the roads, we can't handle anymore traffic there.
Right.
We certainly can't handle a 300-room hotel and people valeting off-site. It's just not
No, and even doable. That street, it's very hard for a tractor-trailer to take that corner
without destroying. It's so hard. And I know a lot of people have also asked about, like, trucks on Broadway and rerouting that truck route. I've, like, been asking about that for years. It's, like, virtually impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think having a time limit where you can get deliveries is a good thing.
Agreed.
In the morning, early in the morning up till
I think we have loading zones until 3 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah, but even that may be a little bit late because it starts getting busy downtown. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
Of course, by truck traffic there, though, I mean tractor trailers that are going just through Saratoga and somewhere else. And it's because it's part of the, like, truck route where you have to go to get inspections and the state highway system and...
Well, you know, I mean, it's too bad because I remember back when Ron Kim was commissioner, I mean, they tried like heck to come up with a way to route the tractor trailers around 29 and around the city. We just don't have the property for it.
You
have
it's
to
like
take,
yeah.
You know, and so, you know, you do the best you can.
Well, you do have to pick your battles because you get lost in trying to, like, do that one thing.
Yeah.
You get so lost in that 2 years goes by and you've gotten nothing done.
Yeah.
So you do have to be smart about, you know, what you...
No.
What you choose to address.
Yeah, you keep talking, no matter what I do. You just keep on talking. One of the things, and this, I know this isn't probably under your department, but one of the things that's irritated me, and I know of 8 people that had sent letters to... Skip Scirocco, Commissioner of Public Works, and have not gotten a response. And I know I've sent 3 of them. The entrance to the Woodlawn Avenue garage.
Oh, my gosh.
That has got to be...
It is a nightmare.
A nightmare.
It's a nightmare.
And I mean, I made a suggestion, and my suggestions, sometimes people laugh at, and
no,
that's
what,
okay.
What is it?
But I always said if they... widen that, took one parking spot away on that end there, and took the tree down, and even maybe move the tree down farther, you know, put a new tree down farther, you would have a large entrance, and people could come in and exit without, I mean, it's really
So I totally agree. It's a complete nightmare. Traffic management actually falls under public safety.
Good.
So that would be something that would be in conjunction with public works, because you're talking about the curbs and moving trees, and so it'd be together. But what I find is that the intersection where Country Corner is, it's so hard to get in and out of that intersection, but you can't put stop signs or a light there because it's too close to the intersection of Broadway and Lake Avenue.
Sure.
So you have people coming in and out of there that are, you know, backed up, and then you have people coming in out of Adirondack Trust that are backed up, then Woodlawn, and so then people cut through Storts to get over by the movie theater, and it's just, I mean, I've gotten stuck there for 15, 20 minutes at a time.
Oh, yeah.
It's a total mess. I completely
agree.
And you
cut through Storts, and that's not a large Storts.
No,
and
you shouldn't be doing that.
Right,
dangerous.
You shouldn't be doing it
but
anyway.
But people do it all the time.
Yeah. No, I think that could be widened. Like I say, you take one parking spot away and that tree, and you'd have a wide enough entrance that...
Because
a lot of people don't realize you
really
can go down past the credit union and the restaurant that's there now and turn that way.
Yeah,
but
people
don't realize that. And even when you turn in from that, there could be cars lined up at certain times of the day. I just wanted to throw that at
you. I think that's a really good suggestion. I will say one thing about the Public Works Department. I didn't fully understand the magnitude of the City Hall renovations, rebuild after the fire. And that is all on Public Works. They run that whole thing. And my God, that is a job in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so being in City Hall every day and seeing how much time and energy and resources that has taken from the Public Works Department, I have to give them credit for balancing things the way they have. And they may not be perfect, but holy cow, did they have their hands full with that renovation.
Yeah.
That is huge.
But this has been for years. I wish I knew it was... Because I know Chris would have been very responsive, too.
Yep.
But I always thought it was Skip's department. And
no, I have this terrific traffic team.
Yeah.
And we have a public safety garage down on High Rock.
Okay.
No, I guess it would be Excelsior there. It's you know where like the intersection is of East and Excelsior.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the public safety garage is right down
there.
And so I've got a crew of guys over there who know every last thing you'd ever want to know about state traffic in Saratoga, to the point where I could send them an intersection, and they'll tell me who's complained about it, the history of it, what you can do, what you can't do, and but, you know, they're busy, and you got to.
Oh yeah, you gotta set your ducks up.
And sometimes that's when it's good to have the new person who is, you know, I'm new here, so I'm asking everything.
Yeah,
it's a great opportunity.
And you're
to bring
going in
up.
With open eyes on something that the previous commissioner or two previous commissioners may have had a lot of other big things on the plate and just couldn't get to that.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know.
And the one thing I am not willing to accept as an answer is this is the way we've always done it, so that's how it's being done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a month into this. I'm not pushing things down people's throat yet, but when someone gives me that as an answer, I take note and I work on developing that relationship so we can get to a point where I can say, you know, it's not working for me. I need to go back to someone who's made this complaint or who has expressed this concern to me and give them a real definitive answer. Because otherwise, you just kick the can down the road and 10 years from now, they're still asking the same question and having a, you know, frustrating lack of response.
And other things may have happened. I'm surprised there hasn't been a huge accident on that garage thing. I mean,
I can't believe there hasn't been more traffic safety issues in general, given the amount of precarious crosswalks we have. And the, I mean, I know that I live down on Caroline and Circular. I cross a lot between the Hampton Inn and the Parting Glass if I'm trying to get to like Four Seasons grocery store, or just walking anywhere with the kids, really. And if you are trying to cross, especially where Henry is and Lake Ave,
right.
If you're trying to cross over there, nobody stops for you. Nobody slows down. There are people coming down hills on both sides. People are speeding. It is really, it's really hard. I could stand there with a stroller and groceries and kids and wave and scream and yell, and people still don't stop.
No, they don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. It's very tough to be a pedestrian. I mean, drivers really need to get refresher courses, I think, every 10 years.
It's all about changing people's behavior, I think, a little bit. And we have a complete streets committee that's one of the things that they work on a lot, is how can we get people to be more aware of the other, whether it's pedestrians, bicyclists. Yeah, be aware of the other people who are trying to get someplace on foot or on a bicycle, and really be mindful of that, because we should be able to all walk and bike and drive wherever we want.
Well, the other thing, too, is we have an awful lot of people from out of town, and where they come from, that pedestrians may not come first. You know,
well,
I mean,
I know. Although I come from the city and pedestrians do come first.
Oh, no.
But
and
yeah,
you go to Vermont and it's the same thing. I mean, my gosh, people will walk out in the street without looking, but you're supposed to know that they have the right of way. I mean, pedestrians are it. So I think if you got people from out of the state or out of town where they don't have that so much.
They're not used to a downtown walking
environment.
Yeah,
they just keep going by, and it could be dangerous.
I totally know what you mean.
Hey, something big came up just, I don't know if it was this week or late last week, but when the governor proposed his budget.
Oh, yeah, that.
Oh, yeah, that little thing.
God.
I mean, we went through this 10 years ago, I think it was, or 9 years ago.
We did.
And I think that's one of the reasons why our commissioner of finance won the election, was because of this. I mean, undue, not credit, but undue problems stemming from something like this causes the current commissioner to take a lot of flack. Because of the decisions you have to make.
Tell people what we're talking about.
So yeah, we're talking about, go ahead.
So we have a big state deficit in the state budget. And Governor Cuomo announced on Tuesday how he was planning on dealing with that big budget deficit. And one of the things he's doing is taking away all the aid municipalities get from video lottery terminals. And we're someplace that has VLTs. We have them at the Racino. And so we have been getting money from the state for years now. Because of those VLTs. And he announced on Tuesday that he was taking away all of the aid for 2020. And we were getting $2.3 million. That was what we were estimated to get this year in aid. And so that has a humongous impact on our budget. And that money is specifically earmarked for public safety and public works.
Yeah.
And so 10
And that's
years,
already in the budget this year, correct?
It's already in the budget. Yep, it's in the operational budget. And so none of us had any idea this was coming. And on Tuesday, it was like, you know, it kind of is a classic moment in politics. I come into office thinking I'm going to do one thing. I've got all these plans. I'm underway. Things are going great. And then all of a sudden you get $2.3 million taken away in your budget, and you come to a dead halt and you realize, my God, there's a possibility I could spend the next 2 years lobbying Albany and trying to handle this massive budget shortfall that we're suddenly up against.
Yeah, I know last time it was more money than this.
We laid off a lot of people.
Yeah, and I can't remember his name, and I don't mean this to be derogatory, but the blind governor.
Deval Patrick. No, what am I saying? It's
I know.
On the tip of my tongue.
Patterson.
David Patterson.
He's the one that pulled the VTL money last time.
David
now,
Patterson.
I'll tell you, in my opinion, we're going to get part of that money back, the 2.1, because when Patterson pulled it, I think it was a lot more than 2.1, but then they ended up going to Albany, whatever.
Well, yeah.
And we ended up with 2.1 million. So it was, I think, 3 or 4 million, if I can remember.
The number
right.
has varied a lot, and it brings up a lot of issues, but I will say back when this happened in 2009, 2010, the one thing that is noticeably different on our end is that, you know, we were in like a worldwide recession then. I mean, the economy was in the toilet, and we did not have the healthy fund balances that we have now as a city. So on one hand, back when that happened, it was devastating for public safety. We had to lay off 7 police officers, 7 firemen. We had voluntary retirements of a couple of our chiefs that were incredibly emotional and challenging. And we went down to our lowest numbers, really, in recent memory. We had 57 active duty officers on the police force. It's taken this past 10 years, we're just up to 59 active duty officers. So we're just back. We've just recovered. And we have funding. We're budgeted for 75, and we do have 74 officers. Like, we have the spots full, but we have people on deployment. We just had 2 of our guys go to Afghanistan. We have people out on maternity leave. We have people out on injuries. So we have 74 officers. We have them filled. Those spots are filled, but we only have 59 who are active duty. So we are not in a position where we can even handle one layoff.
Yeah.
So
no, I know.
The good thing was that immediately the entire city council rallied, got together. We've already started lobbying the governor. We put out a letter yesterday signed by all of us to the governor. Carrie Warner, Daphne Jordan, they have all put letters that the county is working on asking for something. It's a very unified voice that we're putting forward because we are different than so many of the other gaming locations in the state. Because we still have the racetrack, and it's going to be open for business this summer, no matter what.
Right.
And so we're going to have this huge influx of people, and that means we have to be able to keep them safe, and we have to be able to keep the roads and the infrastructure up and in good working condition, no matter what. And a lot of these other locations, they're not located where there's a downtown or SPAC or, you know, other stuff going on. And they don't have these huge seasonal influxes. So the challenges of public works and public safety in this instance are really unique to the city. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why hopefully the governor will restore the funding for us.
Yeah, and my prediction is we're not going to get 2.1. We'll probably get, you know, like 1.75 or 1.65. And that's just my opinion because of what happened last time. But in looking at the budget, there are so many other things he could cut that were giveaways that, I mean, you could find the money for the VLTs throughout the state.
I quite agree. There's a lot of fat in that budget.
There is.
But
that's why I kind of think we'll get something back, but I don't think you ever get what you want.
I hope so.
You know,
the governor doesn't give Saratoga a lot of love.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that a lot of times people perceive us to be this incredibly affluent, successful community.
Exactly.
And so when we ask for more money, you know, they're like, you're doing just fine.
Right.
And that's
a
really
perception that Saratoga has.
Yeah, but that is incredibly short-sighted. And I think when you look at those numbers from 2010 and you see the effect that larger amount of funding had on public safety then, and you look at today, you realize that we're just not that big a city. We don't have this massive budget where that's not going to make an impact. It's going to make an impact, but thankfully we're all working together. There's no partisanship. This is like one voice, one effort.
Sure.
And it does give us an opportunity to think creatively, though, about how we could maybe work this money out of the operational budget for our city so that we're not in this predicament again.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's tough. And speaking with past mayors, going way, you know, years back, it's tough not having a tax increase for 8 years. Even, I talked to one who recently, two mayors back, said even if it's 0.25% every other year, I mean, you need something, even though we have good revenues and that, you need something to keep your revenues up. And I don't know. There's so many factors that go into it that I just hope we don't get hit bad.
I understand. I've heard that argument before. I wish I knew enough about that in particular, like mm-hmm. how raising taxes a tiny bit affects, you know, other, has a ripple effect of that.
Right.
But I do know that we have really, really healthy fund balances right now, and that's because of these very responsible fiscal management of the city. And so this is, we're not going to have a knee-jerk layoffs, round of layoffs.
My
public safety department, my chiefs, they know that their guys, the women, the men that work in those departments, their jobs are safe. There's nothing to worry about. We're in a much different position, and we're going to take care of it one way or the other without affecting the levels of staff in public safety.
Yeah, and it's a smaller amount than it was before. So, I mean, before it was a larger amount we depended on. Yeah, three or something. Yeah, and it was a bigger nut to crack. And now, I mean, it's not that $2 million is a lot of money, but it's not as much. I think you can deal with it better within the city.
I think so. And I just was so reassured, though, that, you know, immediately the reaction from our finance commissioner and the rest of the city council was that, don't worry, we'll get through this. We know how needed and necessary both public safety and public works are, but especially our police force and our fire and EMS. And they, you know, immediately said, like, don't worry, we'll figure this out in a way that does not affect those departments, because we know how critical they are to the safety of everyone in the city and the tourists and everyone who enjoys our downtown and all these special venues that we have. Mm-hmm. So that was great.
One of the other important issues, and I don't know if it affects this, is the new EMS station in the lowlands mm-hmm. of the racetrack.
Well, it is one of those moments where you say, my God, we need to, I mean, your instant reaction is we got to pause with everything until we kind of assess and figure out where we are, because we need to make smart financial decisions. And, you know, it's been like 4 or 5 days, so I'm not sure where
we are.
Yeah, we're I mean, I know with the third station, we're moving forward as planned, but the steps we're taking are not huge ones.
Right.
We just approved a contract for a company called Huber Brewer to come in and do a needs analysis of the site, so they could give us recommendations on what we needed in that building, and we could get a better sense of what the total cost would be. So we just signed that contract with them. That was a $33,000 contract. That's something that I think we would all agree we feel safe doing. You know, whether we have this money or not, that's still going to be a wise, responsible choice and helps us plan. Everything's about planning ahead so that what we're doing now doesn't affect how we're operating a year or two or three from now.
Now, not on you.
Yeah.
I think the public's still in the dark about this. This is leased property.
This is leased property, correct? NYRA is leasing its property.
Okay. How much is the lease? I don't think the mayor's ever come out and said we're leasing from NYRA for X amount of dollars a year.
So we have a commitment from NYRA. I have not seen the signed lease yet.
Okay.
But I know it will be readily available to us the second we have it signed, and it'll be something, you know, that we're
made public.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I know people are worried about that. They're saying we're building a multi-million-dollar building on lease property. How much are we paying for the lease?
I think it's going to be a nominal amount. NYRA is not interested in making money off of the lease, is my understanding, and they've been incredible partners in this.
Mm-hmm.
And what they want to see is a facility that really is functional for public safety throughout the city, the Eastern Ridge especially, but also it gives us an opportunity to bring in the hazardous material hazmat truck and mm-hmm. have that stationed right there, because it's right next to the exit for the highway.
Yeah.
And so it'd be a really smart spot to have the hazmat vehicle. And then the county, they pay for that vehicle. They pay for the garage, they pay for the storage, they pay for everything around it. So there's a lot of creative ways to bring in different agencies and different revenue streams.
So that's a perk for the city by having that. Plus it's only around the corner from the track. So
exactly.
You have to have people stationed, you know, pay for firemen and police to be stationed on Union Avenue in case they're needed. So you have the fire station right around the corner now.
Yep, exactly. We're hoping to have a command center there so that when we have huge events in Saratoga or, God forbid, anything catastrophic happened, we would have a command center with communications, everything we needed for all the different agencies to come in and be able to respond to something together, meaning the county, the state, our local police department. So that would be a really good thing.
Sure. And I don't know if this comes into play or anything. I know you're down far away, but if I'm not mistaken, a few years ago, and this was when Chris was commissioner, they did a study and Fifth Avenue, some of the owners were complaining that there was noise on Fifth Avenue, lawn mowing, pounding or whatever, and repairing houses and bothering the horses on the Oklahoma track workout. Now, will this affect, the siren's going to be heard up there. Now, will they exit the fire station without their sirens
totally.
And head them?
So I can speak to this well because I live not even a block away from the fire station on Lake Avenue. But they have a delay in which they will pull out, not put anything on until they're a certain distance away from
Excellent.
The station so they don't bother anyone. We're very aware of the neighborhood and making sure that we build this building that flows and works within the characteristics of the neighborhood. We don't want people to feel like they're out of town a little bit and then suddenly they've got this monstrosity next to them.
Yeah.
And we're, of course, horses. Is anything more important than horses in this town?
No.
I'm not sure that...
I'll tell you about
that. I don't even think
dogs
are maybe right underneath, but...
If you're in a line and you're waiting for horses to cross,
we wait for the ducks to cross in Congress Park.
Yeah, I know.
So we would never do anything that negatively affected them, and we're working together
Excellent.
With neighbors and the horse owners and everyone to make sure this is a good and happy and... doesn't disturb people in that neighborhood.
Excellent,
yeah.
Excellent. That's good to know. One of the things that you had mentioned about the command center and huge events, can you talk a little bit about the fireworks?
Yes, I can.
I'll tell you, it seems to be getting crazy in this city
Lord.
Over the year, parades and whatnot.
So I think the problem is that, and I was one of these people, you have fireworks in a town like Saratoga, and you kind of just assume that the city's paying for them, and you don't think about the cost of the fireworks and whose pocket that's coming out of. And in the case of our city, New Year's Eve and 4th of July, those fireworks have always been paid for by whoever's sponsoring the events that day. So the 4th of July was just taken over by the Chamber of Commerce. New Year's Eve is the Chamber of Commerce and Saratoga Arts working together. And fireworks are probably $10,000 per holiday. And then there's also the insurances. And then you have to apply for a mass gathering permit from the city. Anytime you have an event of and you hit a certain size, you have to go to the city and make sure you have permits, because we have to make sure we have fire and police and safety protections in place so that if you have a mass gathering, we're making sure streets and roads are closed off and not... big terrorism issues are prevented. There's a lot of stuff we have to do to make sure people can go to these events and be safe and be comfortable. And so whoever's putting on that event is responsible for paying for the extra police and fire costs. And that's something that we give to them before the event, and we break it all down. And so they really know exactly how much money they're going to have and have to fundraise. And we really work together with people to make sure they're comfortable with those costs, they know what they are going in, and then they pay that bill. But now we're in a position where the Chamber of Commerce has come to us and said that they can't fundraise. They don't have the money to cover the police and fire and the fireworks. It's become too challenging for them financially to do. And so it has put the fireworks in jeopardy. I know the fireworks were not planned for this New Year's Eve. And it was kind of overlooked, I think, initially when they put out all the events and what was going on for New Year's Eve. People just assumed there's going to be fireworks. And when it was made aware that they weren't going to have any, and people started getting wind of that, the public was really, really, really unhappy. And so we were lucky enough to have some local businesses and residents, one business in particular, step up to the plate at the last minute, say they would fund the fireworks. But, it was, maybe 8 or 9 days before New Year's. And so everyone had to go into full speed, get back into the office. Everyone was during holidays, figure out the police and fire schedule, make sure it was staffed, they could do it. But everybody did it, and it worked, but it's going to be an ongoing issue.
Yeah.
And so the Chamber of Commerce has set up a fireworks fund because it really has to be something that the public is more engaged in terms of how it's getting paid for.
Right, aware of the cost.
Yeah. So you can donate at any time. It's on the Chamber of Commerce website. I believe it's just called the Fireworks Fund. But I think that probably it's something that we'll need to handle in a more creative fashion moving forward. I know that I love being able to celebrate holidays here. My kids love seeing fireworks this year. They were earlier. They were at 5:45 because they already had a digital midnight planned.
A laser show.
Yes, yeah. So they couldn't have them both at once. So.
Right.
But for little kids, that was awesome because my kids don't get to stay up until midnight. And
right.
So we saw them in the park at 5:45. We went out to dinner. We went home. It was great.
Yeah, and when you're talking about that, I think, you know, that may be a good time to have them because the children can stay.
It's so nice for families. It's so nice for families. Yeah,
because laser shows are very good, too. I mean,
they are. And for environmental reasons and to be more, like, you know, green as a city, I think it's certainly something we should look into. I have no idea what the cost is of doing a laser show or the feasibility. I mean, it's just not.
Right.
And then, you know, I do get to a point where I think, as much as I love fireworks, I've got a lot of important issues that I need to address in public safety. And fireworks, you know, the chamber can handle and they can run with that. And I can be here in a support role, but they're not necessarily priority for
sure.
Public safety.
Let's take the phone call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Morning caller.
Hey, Rick and Robin, it's Nancy Muldoon calling.
Hi,
great
Nancy.
Show. I'm enjoying listening. And wow, the chamber charges $425 per membership, and they're saying that they don't have enough money for fireworks. Wow, somebody should really look into that. I just find that fascinating.
And then
regarding the VLT money, I was not surprised when, you know, our psychopath of a governor is doing this. I wasn't surprised that he took the VLT money away. I mean, this guy is completely insane, and he needs to be removed from office. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay,
thanks,
Nancy.
Nancy.
You know, I this is one of the things that I go around and around with Bill. You know, I always say New York City and that surrounding area elects the governor. We really don't have anything to say about it up here because there's more than half the population of the state lives down there.
Mm-hmm.
So I says, you know, we should really figure out a different way to elect a governor, because we'll never have a Republican governor again.
Well, yeah, I know.
But he said,
you
got to remember, he said, people vote, trees don't.
Oh.
Which means, yeah. Well, that's one.
Snap.
But that's what, yeah, but that's.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
He wanted a reaction from me on that, I know. Because Bill, like I said before, Bill's a great guy, and he says things to get me going.
What I think is just so awful about the way that politicians run, especially for the governorship, is that they pretend to be really sensitive and aware of the needs of upstate New York. And they talk about, you know, making this a better place to have small business and really addressing the economic needs that are unique to upstate New York. And then they get in office, and the first thing they do is propose a casino in upstate New York as a way to stimulate the economy. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah.
That is. And then you get these governors who are in office, and they just, upstate no longer registers for them.
Well, yeah, and I don't even think we get a lot of attention from the candidates when they're running for governor up here. I mean, we don't really get a lot upstate. And there's a reason for that. And I think, you know, you look at presidential elections, and I think they don't come to states, or they don't go to states that they know they can't win. And I think because they want to spend their efforts and money in states that maybe are middle or whatever. And I think that's what happens here. We get, like you said, I feel we get shunned, but then again, they try to appease us by putting things that they know that aren't going to go up here, like the casino.
I will say that John Kasich came here when he was running for office for the presidency, mm-hmm. and I really thought that was, I really respected that.
Yeah.
That he came and gave us a little attention, because we everyone deserves to have the attention of candidates.
Oh, most, and I don't mean everybody. I don't want to pigeonhole everybody.
But also, I think people assume that we're a Republican city, and we're not. We're far more Democrat than we are Republican.
Right.
And so we're kind of an anomaly in upstate New York. the surrounding areas vote a little more red. And so people stereotype upstate New York as all one thing, all one group of people, all one mindset. And that's really unfair to the people who live up here.
But that's only been in the last, I think, 6 or 7 years that we've become more diverse in our party affiliations. I mean, this used to be a strict Republican area. You couldn't get a job unless you were a registered Republican. My brother-in-law wanted to get a job at the track probably 45 years ago, and when he was in college, and for the summer, and he had to go see the Republican chairman to get his blessing, and are you registered? No. Well, then register Republican, and you get the job. And that was old-time politics, too. Don't get me wrong.
I've heard some of those stories, and it's so wild to me because I feel like I represent a whole new generation, a new wave of people who we don't tolerate the nepotism or the kind of the old good old boys network.
No,
well,
that's not done anymore.
But I mean, we do have a lot of respect for the people that came before us and the people that contributed to this community, certainly. And I don't think you can operate well in Saratoga if you don't have a deep, healthy respect for the history of the city. But that being said, this idea that connections or relationships are going to help you when it comes to getting things done in City Hall,
right?
That is so far gone. In fact, I spent the bulk of my week dealing with a parking ticket situation that was predicated on this idea that if you had a buddy in City Hall, you'd get your parking ticket tossed. And that is absolutely 100% not the case.
No.
And, everyone pays fines, pays tickets. I pay my parking tickets. I pay them. And the laws in the city of Saratoga Springs apply equally to all of us, no exceptions.
And, that may have happened 30 years ago, 40 years, when we were a very small community. Things were changed. I mean, hey, look, back in the day, the mobsters, when they were in Saratoga, I mean, the commissioners were bought and paid for. Even the Chief Veach, when he was here, is the one that told me that. And he said, but that was then, and that's how things operated, because they brought a lot of money to the city. They had brought a lot of people. And I mean, like I say, things happened back then, and you really can't say we're going to operate like that now.
And my feeling is I'm doing this for it's a 2-year term, and it pays nothing, absolutely nothing. It's less than minimum wage. And so to be bought or influenced by outside interests, where does that get
me
2 years?
Gain? Yeah.
What does that get me?
Right.
I'm on the Saratoga Springs City Council for 2 years, and then after that, I'm morally bankrupt.
Right.
I've sold my soul, and I'm back at home sitting around. I mean, with debt probably from my 2 years of getting paid nothing. Where does it get me? Nowhere.
And after 1 year, you got to start campaigning again and spending more money.
Yeah.
So it's
doesn't make sense to me at all.
I blame it on the former government, Robin.
All roads lead back to you.
That's right.
I think it's an important topic to bring up, though, because I know that there's been a lot of scuttlebutt about campaign contributions and how they were perceived by people in terms of buying influence or buying votes or whatnot. I heard a lot about that this campaign season, and it really bothered me because I know that for me, I raised money totally, legally, exactly. I followed every campaign finance rule. I disclosed everything I needed to disclose, and I raised a good, healthy amount of money. But to me, that was because I put so much work into getting where I got, and it was a real, in my mind, reflection of how the community felt about me as a candidate.
Right.
And they were supporting the person who they'd had experience with, who they'd worked on things with together, and they felt really confident that I was the right choice for that spot.
Sure.
So to me, that was all it reflected. It didn't reflect big development. It didn't reflect the hospital. It didn't reflect anything other than their confidence in my candidacy.
Right.
And anyone I took any money from, whether it was $1 to $1,000, I would never have taken money from them if I didn't feel comfortable saying no, no, no to whatever it is they wanted. If that was going to affect our relationship, affect our friendship, so be it. I needed to be comfortable saying no. I would have taken money from anyone I felt an obligation to.
Well, then you don't take their money rather than have it affect your relationship.
Exactly, and I did turn down checks.
Right. Hey, I want to just give out our number. Nancy has it etched on the side of her phone. But our number here, if you want to give a call in, is 518-580-5783. That's 518-580-5783, and we can take your questions if you'd like. You're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM Skidmore Radio. And it's
I gotta say, I love me a little Nancy Muldoon. She's great.
Yeah,
and she's great, and well, she's got a lot of passion. And
well, she does, and she loves the city. Yep. And one thing about Nancy, you always know where she stands.
Exactly, and I love that. I love
well,
that.
Of course,
so few people are willing to engage in honest dialogue about politics and things that matter in the city, and I love that she is willing to do that. And we can talk about things. We can disagree, much like you and I.
Right.
And it's cool if we disagree. And we learn when we're challenged. And
as long as you can debate,
yeah,
evenly, and state your opinions, and not get in arguing matches. Debate is good.
Yep.
And we've kind of lost good debate.
I completely agree.
Right, everybody screams at each other, no matter
so
what
sad.
Opinion you have, and it is sad.
They go to labels. Everyone goes to labels. They want to label you right away. And especially as a woman, I am not a fan of identity politics at all. I'm not going to vote for someone just because they share a gender with me.
Right.
But at the same time, one of the things I loved in conversation with Nancy was that she recognized that I was running for a position that only men had held in the past, and people don't associate a young female who's a mom with public safety. As the public safety commissioner, it's just not who they expect to see in that position.
Sure.
And people would say to me things like, oh, you know, they're going to eat you alive. Those departments are going to eat you alive. They will have no respect for you. You will be destroyed by them. And I was kind of shocked at the latent sexism I experienced throughout the campaign. And Nancy really saw that clearly. And I so appreciated our conversations about it.
Let me tell you something. People don't really know about women. You don't mess with women.
You don't mess with women. And we, you know, I balance having four kids and doing this job. And either something, people say, like, you give the work to the busiest person in the room.
Right.
For a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I mean, women bring a different perspective to issues, and they look at it differently. And here again, if you're open to debate, you can always learn something. So
absolutely,
if you put your perspective in, you should be able to debate and come up with a happy medium.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think one gender, whether it be female and female talking about something or male and male, you really kind of not respect the other's opinion. And so I think females, and I always use the example of in service organizations. Mm-hmm. I'm in Kiwanis, and it used to be all males,
mm-hmm.
all right? And back in the early 80s, they allowed women to join. You know, women had the auxiliaries. You know, you couldn't join the main club because that was for men. But they let women in, and women saved service organizations because, number one, they're harder workers than men.
We're
they
tough.
They have ideas that men wouldn't think of.
Yeah.
And I have to say, they saved service organizations and made them stronger. So, you know, the idea that you're going to be chewed up and spit out by an old guard because they're all male, hey,
not the case.
They got something else coming up.
I know.
Up, I'll
just because I'm friendly doesn't mean I'm a pushover. But I have a new police chief and a new fire chief within the last year. They're both new, and they're both, you know, younger. They have young families, and they are so wonderful to work with because they just don't reflect any of this old boys network. This,
yeah.
You know, they're so open and collaborative, and it's just been such a wonderful experience getting to know them that I think it's just changed the tone and tenor of the whole department.
The whole department,
yeah.
Yeah. Hey, another subject which is statewide, and it's kind of interesting to see what's happened with it this month, is the bail reform.
Oh, God.
I mean,
what a nightmare.
Oh, my gosh. Whoever Holy thought hell. Of that, you know, has to be insane.
Well, I understand the impetus for it. You know, I do think there's a case to be made for people who cannot afford bail being held on $2,000 or $3,000 for a misdemeanor charge. And if they're the breadwinner in their family, that really destroys their entire family. And so I think there's a case to be made for this one small area, but they did it in such a broad, sweeping fashion that it just gutted our system. It's gutted the criminal justice system in New York. It has endangered lives, killed people already. It is wildly irresponsible. The new discovery rules have put so much pressure on DAs, on police departments. I know how it's affecting us. I can tell you from experience, I've seen it. It is crushing what it's doing to especially small cities. And it makes me wild. It's taken all it's taken judges' power away to really use their discretion in determining who's a public safety threat.
Yeah, and protect the people.
And they have to release everybody. Mm. No one is protected. And it's such a scary thing to hear people say that who are district attorneys or police chiefs. And I don't know how much longer it has to go on until something happens, but it makes me wild.
Already had a murder in Albany. We've had sex offenders released. And yeah, I think it should end now. I mean, I don't.
Me too, right this second. Been,
yeah.
Me too.
Now, I think there should be a sliding scale for bail. If you have money, bail's higher. If you are, in the I don't want to say lower class, but
socioeconomically,
right, economically, then, maybe $500 because that'll mean a lot to them. But I think there should be something.
When you go out to dinner and you get your bill, they don't say, like, come pay us when you feel like it and expect you to come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like human nature. And you're talking about people who most likely have committed a crime.
Sure.
No, innocent until proven guilty, yes. But a lot of these folks have done what they're being accused of. And so you know that they're already compromised in terms of making good choices and being responsible. And so, of all the people who are not going to show up again and who are going to go out and their recidivism is going to continue, it boggles my mind. It's it was a good intention gone totally haywire. And it's also reflective of how things go, how things happen in Albany.
Right.
And how legislation is passed there, because there was so much other stuff tied to this. And there's so much fat that surrounds all these pieces of legislation that go before before Albany and the Assembly, that issues like this get obscured and all that junk.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know how they get anything done in Albany. It seems like
it's always been that way from the time that we created the legislature in Albany in the 1700s. We've always been laughed at as one of the weirdest.
And I hate when safety becomes partisan. Like, yeah. This should not be a partisan issue.
No.
But it instantly becomes that because it's like, oh, Democrats control the assembly for the first time.
Right.
They control the legislature. So this is a liberal thing. And whether it is or it isn't, it's not going to get us anywhere arguing in a partisan fashion over who's responsible for this. We just have to make it safe for people to be living and working and just, having their regular lives without worrying about.
Well, the funniest thing it's not funny, but there was an illegal immigrant who was caught stealing. So he was released, and the next day he was caught stealing again. And he did it 4 days in a row. I'm saying to myself, Uchi Mama, what's happening?
It's really scary, and there's scarier examples than that of doing the same, committing the same crime over and over and over, and how many times do they have to commit it to be remanded? But there's no recourse for the judges.
But my fear is that how things escalate, and a person who was caught maybe robbing an appliance store today and is released may go to a bank in 3 days with a gun.
No kidding.
And because he may say, well, I'm going to get out.
He's under stress. Or he wants to, they're under a lot of pressure, stress, and I could see that things escalate. And I think that we've seen that happen already.
Sure.
I mean, it's been not even a month, and the devastation that has happened on the other side of this for victims, for families, it's been a total nightmare. And for us in Saratoga Springs, to get the discovery down to the DA's office and the amount of time that is now required has put so much effort and intensity and workload on our department that I think we're going to have to hire somebody else to help facilitate just getting the videos and everything we need uploaded and to the DA's office. Karen Hagen has told me that they're not prosecuting violations anymore. They're like, forget it. Forget about that. I mean, violations are like whatever.
Right.
Because they're so overloaded with the cases they have already. And when they start dropping cases because police departments don't have the resources and time to get them the proper evidence and discovery, I mean, it's just a tragedy.
Well, and it puts the police in positions already, too. I mean, you know.
We're already strapped in terms of our resources, as we talked about earlier in the show. And so to suddenly have to throw more money at your support staff just to get videos uploaded and case files down to the DA's office because we're meeting this arbitrary, very shortened deadline.
But I'm a safety, too, of police because, I mean, knowing that you can get out of jail without bail, you know,
so
like you said,
exhalation.
I mean, you know, you never know. I feel bad for our law enforcement today, whether it be city, state, or county. I mean, you know, I'll tell you, the past couple of years, people are getting bolder.
I feel so strongly about being an advocate for those officers because we have an incredible, incredible police department. They really have a totally different culture than I felt when I moved here, for example. And they are so dedicated, and they're really young, a lot of them. All our patrol officers are young. And they're already going out and right now in Saratoga Springs dealing with the homeless population, which, you know, people call them constantly about issues with the homeless. And it's, again, a situation where there's nothing they can really do.
Maybe
somebody's trespassed or done something that they'll be gone for one night. But a day later, they're going to be back on the street. And it's the most frustrating experience for our officers because they're getting criticized by everybody.
I know.
And it's not their fault.
Hey, Robin, believe it or not, our time's up.
Oh, my gosh.
And we have so many on this sheet of questions here. We've got so many to go over. I hope you'll come back.
Absolutely.
In the near future.
Yes, I would love to.
Okay. I don't want to take up a lot of time on the weekends because I know that's family time,
too.
I'm
not usually doing a lot from 8 to 9 on Saturdays.
All right. Well, that's what I'd like to have you back on.
Thank you.
Before we go, I want to say one thing. Two things. If you want to catch the show, if you only caught half of it and you want to get back, the other part, you can go to www.saratogabroadcasting.com. Easy site to remember.
It really is.
And you can go to Talk Saratoga's podcast page, and you can listen to any of the shows, past shows. Also, what's going to be on saratogabroadcasting.com, a few of us had a problem, and I got elected to put my name on it, which, why not, is the insurance benefits for life for elected officials that serve, and this doesn't apply to you, Robin, that serve 10 years or more. And this includes our commissioners, supervisors, and we have to pay for that. And premiums run $25,000 a year. That's according to past finance commissioners and city attorneys. So we started a petition online, and like I said, you know, they threw my name on it because I get yelled at by our commissioners all the time, certain ones. So if you want to sign the petition, you can go to http://chng.it/p, I'll give you the capital T, WGNP2V. It'll be up on Saratoga Broadcasting, so you can forget about those letters. They'll be on there. You click that, and you can sign the online petition. You know, I'm not saying that, and this is as of 2019. It's not for anybody that's getting them now. And this doesn't include our working force on for city employees. They're contracted, they're under contract, you know, they negotiate their pay, their benefits and whatever, and they give and take, so they deserve what they get. And this isn't for them, this is for elected officials. I don't think anybody elected should get benefits for life, not even in our national Congress or Senate. But it'll be up on SaratogaBroadcasting.com. Think about it. If you want to sign it, fine. If you don't, that's fine, too. You know, your opinion is your opinion. So with that, I'm going to say thank you to Robin.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you. It's great. Information is great. And next Saturday, my mind is mush, so I can't remember who our guest is, but we'll have a great one.
I'm sure you will.
It'll be in the paper under the community events, and if you're on Facebook, we put it on Facebook, so I'm trying to think. I can't think right now. But right now, again, thanks, Robin, and we're going to get John on with Polka Magic. So, John, take it away.